Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 159 for June 17th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
159 seems like such a huge number. Are we getting old? I'm not. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, I guess you're as old as you feel. And yep. I feel like we've only done a couple of these.
You know, we're actually coming up on a five-year anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah, just November. A few months away, actually.
November. My metabolism is moving at a much slower rate because I was in Minnesota and it was 54 degrees. And man, when I came back
cold.
To Houston, it was 90.
Yeah, you betcha.
It was so much fun, I tell you. But oh, good Lord, the switch from 54 to 90 and 90 and 54 again. That was a trip.
Well, at least you didn't go in the winter when they're having blizzards and stuff and people are still out there in shorts. It's just a little snow, you know.
Actually, it was neat to see things that were actually green up there as opposed to being brown and white covering all over it. And so that was a trip. I actually have been up there in the wintertime. Shout out to our friends in the radio reading services. I was at IAAIS, the International Association of Audio Informational Systems. And no, on Wheel of Fortune, we did not buy a consonant in all of that. The guys over at Connecticut Radio up at Chris Nears and John and Ashley over at North Carolina and our friends at Georgia Radio and good Lord, so many people that we saw over there and it was really, really good to see. I'm going to forget somebody and they're going to get mad at me. Kansas, Michael over at West Texas who interviewed me. That's going to be interesting. So he interviewed me about the new socializer and my past histories of things, so they play some of our content over there. And we actually released something for this conference. Jamie and I came up with this neat idea to be able to provide some content for the radio reading services. We're going to be doing some original programming as well. One of the things that people don't know about the Serotalk Podcast Network is that we are actually carried on terrestrially by many of these radio reading services, and we appreciate them being our partners, and we look forward to expanding on that and seeing everybody at the next conference in Fort Wayne, Indiana next year. I will be crashing probably on Jeremy Curry's couch. It's probably the first thing he learned about it, but yes.
Yeah. Well, at least you warned him a year ahead of time. He's got time to either prepare or move away.
Get the hell out of town.
That's true.
Yeah, that's probably true. Joe, I had a thing I had to go do. It was like right before an FBACB convention, so sorry I missed you.
Going to Europe for a month. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah.
Dude, I must be really terrible to hang around if I made you like leave a continent. That's that doesn't
There's a really
right
nice park you can sleep in. They don't usually roust people until 6 or 7. So
well, it's
yeah.
not like people are forming a coalition.
Oh, no, not at all. Do you think anyone spied on you while you were in Minnesota, Joe, or listened in on your phone conversations or anything?
TSA felt me up in all sorts of neat ways. That was
all right.
Cool.
That was really neat. Yeah, they actually scanned my DVDs. I don't know exactly what DVDs do to get the TSA all upset, but yeah, that was really interesting. And actually, real quick, two things. They have the new body scanners because the old body scanners are those ones that felt like gigantic MRI machines, and no matter what you did, even though it's open in the front and in the back, it still felt very claustrophobic. These new ones are a little better because you can, if you have vision, you can actually see through them and it doesn't feel as claustrophobic. But then they still kind of sort of pat you down when you come out the other side of it. And when I was coming back from Minnesota, it was really funny because the guy goes, I need to pat your midriff. And I went, wow, I'm not wearing a belt. Thai food? Does Thai food mean you have to pat my midriff? I will stop eating that if that's what the case is. And then I flew on one of the new 787 Dreamliners, insert battery joke here. And those were really, really interesting. It's a kind of a carbon fiber, all one feeling. And it is floaty and it is different, but the seats are still the same Boeing kind of seats. But while you're sitting there, right, and this is United, you're sitting on United, they're going to show you the video on how to put your seatbelt and all together, but you get an ad about United on a United flight about flying on United planes. That seems a little crazy. Yeah.
We're going to advertise the service that you've already actually bought. So, yeah.
And you can't go anywhere, but you know, on your next trip, think about this again, because you might want to fly United so you can see this ad again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fantastic. But yeah, coalition of things. There seems to be a big story that happened while I was gone of recording and watching you and seeing you go places and things. Huh.
Maybe I should care about this more than I do. I'm almost fatalistic about it. It's like...
You're not alone.
I have to agree. I thought it was funny. I was reviewing last week's podcast, and we covered the initial story about the NSA getting things from Verizon. And I think all of us were, yeah, okay. Thought, wow, it's kind of amazing to see that level of apathy. But a week has gone by and more information has come out. And I still feel the same. And I think maybe it's because I've never assumed that everything was private. I always thought, you know, if I am using technology, there's always a way to hack it. There's always a way for people to get the information that I'm putting out into the world. So it didn't come as much of a surprise to me, honestly. That's not to say that I like it. I think it's just more I was expecting it.
You hit my sentiments exactly. I couldn't say that any better at all. To be fair, nothing has, you know, in other words, I haven't seen anyone use my personal data in a nefarious manner. So I suspect if it ever becomes personal, I will have a little different view.
Well, I used the field trial as I was talking about on an earlier podcast. And when I was going to the airport, the Google Now knew that my plane information was there, my hotel information was there. So as I got closer to the airport, it started populating with, you know, your plane is on time, and you could access that from the lock screen. That's awesome. It's right there in notifications, and gave me the weather for Denver, which was my connecting, and Minnesota. When I landed in Minnesota and I brought up my screen, it said, okay, here's the distance to the hotel. Click here to get straight into navigation, which was nice. There was a call button for the hotel right there if I wanted to in Google Now. And it gave me nearby places of interest to make me jealous that I was going to a conference because there was all this neat stuff around me. But point being here is that I let Google Now have all this information. It knew where I was flying. It knew where I was going. It knew my hotel. And it provided some very valuable resources to me, especially being visually impaired, where I didn't have to go look up that phone number. I could just hit the call button from the screen. And it is a matter of value. Leo has talked about this on Twig a bunch of times this week in Google. And Jeff Jarvis has said, you know, there is a loss of privacy, but what do you get out of it? Well, how much are you willing to get to give? I think this comes down to Facebook. I don't get a bunch out of Facebook, but I get a bunch out of Google. So I'm willing to part with my information where I would not be willing to do so with Facebook, to the point that I was born in 1902, because I don't want them to have any valid information on me. Because, you know, as I've said here on the show, Facebook sells me my past back. They want my pictures. They want to know about my birthdays. They want to know about my events. Then they want to sell me a photo album of all the pictures I've uploaded to Facebook. So I don't like that nearly as much as Google, because you can export the data out of Google. You can kill your Google account. You can do certain things to get out of that. So I think it comes down to the individual. I think it comes down to the service you're using. And I think it comes down to the expectation of what you want out of this. But I used to work at Radio Shack / Incredible Universe, Tandy, and we were the guys who asked for your address all the way back to the 80s for a 9-volt battery. This has existed for a really, really long time. Supermarkets do this all the time. They know a lot about you. And, you know, J. Edgar Hoover would find ways to get gigantic coffee-sized recording pieces of equipment in hotel rooms to spy on people. This has just existed. It's just that the technology has made it a lot easier than it has before, but it's not anything new.
Well, maybe it's the fact that it's the government that has people so up in arms. It's one thing to give your information to a supermarket, and it's another to say, oh, the government is spying on me. And then it begins to feel like this is a curtailment of basic freedoms that I should be entitled to. So I guess this kind of lends a whole different viewpoint to privacy. People don't necessarily get up in arms about Facebook privacy, but they do when it's the government talking about it. And in any case, there's a lot of people like Mozilla, Reddit just joined this coalition against doing this week, and lots of other companies there as well.
Yeah, definitely keep up on this if you're interested, because it's going to change constantly as more information is coming out, as Congress gets involved and starts looking into it, as more of these companies who are not allowed to talk about this in any way, shape, or form are then later allowed to talk about it as more public concern grows about it. So definitely it's going to be a fluid thing. We're not going to talk about it very much here on the show because it gets very quickly past our knowledge of many of these matters. So if you want to keep up with that, just make sure you follow us on Twitter and twitter.com/SaroTalk. But trustworthiness always comes down to, oh, I don't know, money and how you feel about money and PayPal's doing something new?
Well, actually, Chirpify is doing something new. They were initially using PayPal and now they're kind of expanding things. And you're probably saying, what is Chirpify? It is one of the most bizarre things I've seen in a while. I can't imagine using this service. It just seems creepy somehow, and I can't really say why. But essentially, there has been a way to do this since last year where on things like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, people could put up their devices or services or whatever to sell, and a user could then say, just reply to this Twitter message with the word buy or gimme if it was maybe a donation type thing or whatever. And so it was meant to be this kind of inline streaming payment service, I guess, where you don't go to a website and process the whole thing. You actually set up an account and do these transactions right through social media. Chirpify was initially using PayPal for this, and now they've expanded beyond that and made it a little easier, plus a little less costly because you're not going to have the transaction fees associated with PayPal. But I don't know where this is going. I just think it's strange.
Just
does
like
anybody
sending
else feel that way?
Money through Gmail a couple of weeks back. It seems weird. It just...
Yeah, it's like it's getting too easy.
Yeah.
Way too easy.
Well, I mean, look at Bitcoin. You know, that's a whole nother conversation and a half. Bitcoin is the alternative currency that some people are looking into. It's just interesting. Let me put it that way. You want to read a lot more about it because, again, that is just different. I agree with you, though. There are so many different ways to think about all these ones and zeros flying past with, say, Google Wallet or Apple Passbook or any number of ways that this information and or dollars can fly back and forth from place to place. Just amazing.
So I'm just curious, have either one of you, like in the process of starting to enter your credit card information, said to yourself, you know, maybe I don't really want to do this right now. Maybe I don't want to buy this thing right now. I don't know, whatever it might be, a subscription to something, or, and you literally kind of pull back.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah. And it's usually where, you know, I don't want to place this order because I keep thinking about getting this other thing too, and I can get them shipped at the same time. And so I just rethink the whole process.
Yep.
And you couldn't do that with this. You either type buy and it's done. You don't have like the chance to stop in the middle. Wait, no, I didn't mean that. My coffee got the better of me. I got way too excited and now I really shouldn't have.
You broke the caffeine.
Yeah.
I don't do Inbox Zero, but what I will do is for things like iTunes and Xbox and things like that, I'll buy point cards or gift cards or something. So that way I do not use my credit card. And that is usually how I keep myself in check. So I don't go, oh, so-and-so came out. I got to go out and buy that app. And you know, if I don't have it on the gift card, then I just don't buy it. It's just okay. And I feel like you almost have to in certain ways put artificial things in place so you do not one-click Amazon and the next thing you know, you've got an entire season of The Prisoner on limited edition Blu-ray, which may have been something I considered once or twice. So it's important because I would have a whole wall full of Space 1999 and other things. And knowing myself the way I do, it is just so much better not to have things in there so I don't feel that compulsion or that, you know, it used to be buy the stick of gum right as you're walking out, the impulse buy. But nowadays, impulse could be $20. People don't have any problems about dropping 20. You know, it's like, oh, no, we went out to dinner and blah, 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 blah. And we went to this movie and then and the next thing you know, you start talking to them and they're like, yeah, it was like $150. I did on a Friday night. Really?
99 cents is almost a thing of the past in the App Store.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dollar menus. Remember that term?
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Wow.
Dead fast food. Now it's like $1.29 menus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember Del Taco and Taco Bell used to have the 59, 69, 79 cent battles, you know?
Yep, they sure did. I remember that well.
When I was growing up, you could buy 3 Jack in a Box tacos for 99 cents. Now you only get 2.
Well, Joe, maybe you should search for a discount online.
Well, things go up all the time, and believe it or not, Bing is actually going up in market share. Yes, I know. I'm shocked, too. Who absolutely, positively thought in their right minds that Bing would find a way to kind of sort of get into the public consciousness and start to move up on things like Google? There are those ads out there right now that's Binging on, where they're attacking Google and saying you can't tell the difference between Google and Bing. And wow, I guess so. But remember when Microsoft got totally just derided for doing this? They're getting into search. What the heck's the matter with them? They'll never be able to challenge Google. Surprise?
Yeah, and they're still not coming super close to Google market share, but they're making inroads there. And even Yahoo had really dropped significantly, and now they're creeping back up just a little bit, too.
Just going to buy the web company by company. They're
going to
pull out
their
checkbook.
That's pretty much true. I'm just going to keep the checkbook out until we win at something.
Since the last time we've had a podcast, they bought 3 more companies. That's what we mean by that, for those who don't follow along with the Yahoo buying sprees. So, craziness. But definitely, Bing is used in image searches. A lot of people find being able to search for images or pictures goes a little better with Bing. And, you know, some of the way that Bing does their results, some people like. And it won't be the only time we talk about Bing on this podcast. Stay tuned.
Well, you know, last week, Ricky mentioned things that we initially talked about and then kind of developed. And another one of those things was Amazon's grocery service. Looks like for $299 a year, you can subscribe to this service and have, in selected areas, your groceries delivered fresh to your door.
A little more than Prime. Good Lord.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Well, I can see why they need to make this a little more expensive, especially initially. This will probably drop eventually, but they kind of have to do something to not make it a huge loss leader. And also when you think about the fact that if you shop for groceries online, in my area, there is a $5 fee for them to do the personal shopping for you whenever you order your stuff, and then $20 to have it delivered. If you shop for groceries once a week, you know, that's already $100 a month just to get the stuff delivered. So this initially seems like, what are you thinking? But if this is something that you do all the time, it could actually be a bargain.
Versus other services you might have like Fresh Direct in New York or Peapod or any number of other ones that are local to your area. Yeah, I see where you're saying, especially now that it's the summer and gas is going up in prices. It makes a lot of sense. But man, we were just talking about changes. Can you ever imagine that You know, I need these CDs, I need this television, and oh yeah, here comes all my groceries, all with one click from Amazon. I mean, it was one thing to think about.
And I got my toothpaste and my dog biscuits. And,
exactly. It was one thing to do it at Costco's, you know, but now.
Right. Now you just get everything.
Yeah.
There are some things that just seem strange to buy together. You know, I bought hamburger meat and an iPhone charger at the same place. It was great.
Yeah. I don't know, the dog food and paper towels, and yeah, there are some odd combinations that when you do that, you're just like, this is just wrong. I shouldn't be able to do this.
Well, it was the same way when Sam's first started to come online and you would walk past that big 5-pound block of cheese and go, yeah, that's a great deal. I don't know what I will do with 5 pounds of cheese right now, but that's such a great deal. I got, it's nachos tonight. It'll be, macaroni and cheese tomorrow, and it'll be a trip to the cardiologist on Thursday. Yay!
No, you just use it to provide snack food during your Xbox One launch party.
When I'm not ordering a pizza through the Kinect.
Xbox
One was mentioned last week at the big press event at E3. And they came out and said all these neat, wonderful things and showed game after game after game. And the press fell all over themselves. And it was like, oh, go get your pre-order for Xbox now. And then Sony came out and pretty much kicked them in the face pretty hard because of a conversation that is happening in the software world, in that disc media at some point is going away. Even though the Microsoft Xbox One this fall will have a Blu-ray player inside it and use Blu-ray discs, Bill Gates years ago said that the next Xbox, being the Xbox One at the time, would be a disc-less system. It would not use disc media. And Microsoft builds things to go 10 years down the road, and it is truly felt that you won't be able to get discs later on in this console cycle. That makes some people who wait for video games to come down in price by going to a store like, let's say, GameStop to buy a used copy of games very scared, because it's going the way that you do with, say, iTunes and music, in that you buy a license for something. You're not buying a physical good. You are actually buying the license to have the ability to play a game, rather than actually holding a box in your hand and say, I have Halo in my hand, here it is. And that probably is the future, but people don't really want to hear that, especially gamers who get very irate about some things. But more than that, it's hard for some people in Silicon Valley to hear that there are parts of the United States that don't have broadband, and that's a little hard for them to gather. And so when you tell somebody, look, this console is going to have to connect to the internet every 24 hours, some people are like, what? What are you talking about? I've got AOL dial-up still. Oh, I mean, we've had a story here on this very program that, you know, there's still a large number of people making AOL a bunch of money for 56K dial-ups. So it goes beyond that, in that some people in the military don't have access to the internet from where they're stationed. And if the Xbox required an internet connection, then they couldn't necessarily play these games out in the field, wherever they're stationed, or in some cases, if you're on a nuclear submarine. And that seems like a crazy edge use case, but you know, there are a lot of people who need some downtime and they want to play their Xbox. PlayStation turned around just a couple hours after Microsoft did their announcement via $499 available this November. Sony said, you know what, how about $399, and you can actually play used games, we don't really care. And they went on to release a YouTube video with a manual on how to play used games on your PlayStation 4, which involved one guy walking up and handing another guy a disc. That was a one-step process and it went viral, and it's really funny. But it comes back again to the guys who make the games. If the guys who make the games feel like they are losing sales. And we had this with UCDs. I don't know if anybody bought UCDs or remembers in the 90s. That was the big argument, was I, as an artist, am not making money when you sell another copy of Foo Fighters. You know, the record store makes it because it's a UCD. And the same fight is happening now in games. And games cost sometimes a lot more than record albums.
Well, you know, all this talk of connecting to the internet kind of makes me think back over the past week. And I recall a story actually, it's a little more than a story. It was just something that happened, which was that Twitter finally updated its API. They kept saying, we're going to do this. We really are going to do this. Actually, we'll do this next week. And they finally did it. So any applications that didn't use the new streaming API kind of quit working.
There were clients I had totally forgotten about until they died. And then people are like, I can't use blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude,
Syrinx, I guess, died.
That's a
yeah.
thing?
And I would say that people were really freaking out about this and kind of scrambling for a new client, except that Twitter got kind of quiet for a little while because nobody could use it if they were on an old client.
Nobody could scream.
Timing. So much timing. I didn't have to learn about people eating cheeseburgers that day. Or
they might have been eating chicken nuggets.
Yeah, they
might have been.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you, Christopher Toth.
Or playing with Rubik's Cube.
There he goes.
Nice. That one apparently did go down for a little while. First of all, for those who don't know, Chicken Nugget is a new beta client that Christopher Toth is working on. Christopher Mongoose Q, who was the initial developer of Quitter. And I don't know if Chicken Nugget is always going to be called Chicken Nugget. It kind of looks like it, but who knows? He may just be pulling our chain a little bit on that one for a while. But regardless, you could download that and play with it. The Cube.
It's got to be new fast foods. It's got to be like how Android does key lime pie and ice cream sandwich, right? He's going to have to do like chicken fries from Burger King.
Chicken and waffles.
Chicken tenders.
Yeah, you could do that. Or, you know, there's the chicken series, right? Like Apple with Waves now, or California places instead of cats. Yeah, that would be, dude. But I would love fast food kind of Whopper, you know, or a Quarter Pounder, or there's just so much to be done here that says too much about my life.
I will say that I did not lose any service on Twitter at any point because I was using Serotech's new Twitter client for the Socializer. And of course,
do tell.
It already supported the new API. And so I was just happily, you know, reading tweets the whole time and watching Twitter. Rick Harmon was retweeting from Twitter, you know, that we're going to do this and we're actually rolling it out in parts of the country. And, but, you know, it was kind of interesting to watch the countdown there.
It's weird because I was not even paying that much attention to Twitter that night. I was actually looking at Facebook, also using the Samnet Socializer, and I was catching up on my nephew's high school graduation and just looking at all the comments. And he had posted pictures, which of course I couldn't see, but I could see the comments on those and was able to like stuff easily and make comments back. And then had family members chatting with me on Facebook chat, also using the Socializer. And of course, when I was ready to get back to Twitter, that was working too. So it was an interesting evening.
See, you people had that, and then people were either messaging me on Skype through Skype Messenger or calling me on Skype, also through the new Socializer, or giving me a shout-out on Google. And so I was having a Google chat as well, all from the new Samnet Socializer, which you can try, believe it or not, for free, 7-day trial, by going to www.satogo.com. That's satogo.com. And you can learn more about that, of course, by looking into our Accessibility Anywhere packages.
And if you're saying to yourself, oh no, but I already had a trial a couple of months ago, and now this new cool thing came out and I can't try it without calling and bugging some salesperson, what am I going to do? Well, it's all good. We got you covered. We have reset trials so that if you have previously had one and you've got a Serotech account that you can log into, then you can take this for a spin.
I will say it is nice to have everything all in one place. The interface is very consistent, whether it's Twitter, Facebook,
Skype,
it doesn't matter. It's exactly the same interface and it's all right there together. So it is a truly seamless experience.
I love it.
Well, coming up after the break, we're going to talk about bicycles, apples, and so much more here on Serotech 159 after the break.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Serotalk 159. And while I was gone, there seemed to have been one or two pieces of Apple news. Just a little bit, nothing major.
They weren't expecting anything.
A couple of things. Yeah.
Something about WWDC. Okay, see, I went from having no consonants to now saying something that has no vowels. So I'm going to spin again here and see if I can buy one. Tim Cook got up on stage and did a little presentation to, I don't know, just a couple hundred thousand people watching online on their Apple TV or on the app, which was also voiceover friendly, which was awesome. So if you wanted to watch WWDC, unlike the Google I/O the month before, it was more of a user kind of keynote presentation, whereas Google I/O was more developer centric. But like Google I/O, it was very much software-based, and some people thought there was going to be a bunch of hardware mentioned, and it didn't seem to be that way. But of course, right at the end, what people really wanted to talk about and see is iOS 7, which is going to come out later this year. The betas are already sort of flying around now. From a low-vision standpoint, it looks in the color schemes really crazy. In fact, it relies on colors in places like yellow for notes and red and calls. And we've talked about this before on High Contrast and that Android show, Byron Lee and I, when they moved from, they being Android, from 4.1 to 4.2, it took a lot of white on black and turned it into black on white or gray on white or weird blue on white. And iOS 7 seems to be taking the same kind of thing initially. Now, let me stress this up front. A, Serotech is a developer for Apple, so we can only talk about things that are in the public eye or that have been mentioned in articles. We cannot speculate. But B, it seems to be kind of like any beta in the front, a little buggy. So if you are thinking about these things, I can't tell you the number of people on Twitter who have rolled back to iOS 6. Because this initial build is not super friendly, nor should it be. It's a beta. It's early on, and we have months before it's released. But what did you guys think of some of the features and things talked about publicly so far about iOS 7?
Well, first of all, I thought it was interesting, perhaps not surprising, but nonetheless interesting, that Apple more or less responded to the really intense criticism and speculation that's been in the press of late, such as can't innovate my insert that word
a dollar and,
and you know,
Apple, aggressive Apple.
No, we're not. I actually kind of liked that, by the way. No, yeah. We're not releasing a plethora of new products at the moment, no new hardware, but we really are focusing on the user experience, and we believe that quality is as important as quantity. Some interesting kind of between the lines things there, I think, that were said during this presentation.
The thing that I noticed was that I was looking at live blogs, not so much watching the stream because I was multitasking and had to do other things and I couldn't easily pay attention to the stream and other stuff. So just kept glancing at live blogs and the journalists were quoting from what was being said on stage. And I kind of wish I had gone through and done a search. How many times did the word gorgeous appear? How many times did the word beautiful appear? It seemed like
magical,
Apple,
amazing.
Well, this time it wasn't so much about that. It was all about what it looks like, you know, gorgeous, beautiful.
It was a very visual. So much so that in the past, there's been kind of an idea when you listen to some of the ads that they would play, you would have kind of an idea of what was going on visually. No, there was a lot of, I swipe here. Okay, I'm going to swipe from the bottom and this happens. And some of the videos had no text narration whatsoever. There was no narrator. It was very much a idea of a visual interface. And I listened to Leo and Twit and they were, you know, doing the call down of, oh, look, that's very BlackBerry. You know, oh, look, that's straight out of Surface. And there was a lot of things that are going to happen that we wouldn't necessarily notice as voiceover users, but someone visually interacting with this and using unique gestures, there is a lot of photocopying here. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not accusing anybody of, oh, you copied that guy and you copied my paper. No, it's interesting in that Apple generally does do a term called Sherlocking, which is they grab a feature or an app or something from somebody else, Instapaper, incorporate it in. It's what they do. And in fact, it's what everybody does now. It's kind of everybody borrows from everybody else to make a better product. But it was very interesting in that, you know, they were going in a way of adding features that seemed like Flashlight. Flashlight's a perfect example. Who would think that out of the 50 billion apps that have been downloaded, I'd say 10 million of them are either fart apps or Flashlight apps? Well, you know, Apple grabbed that. It seemed like a good grab. It seems like a really, okay, that makes total sense. But there's going to be a lot more worked into iOS 7 that's just bundled. And will people then go experiment with something else? If iRadio is there, would you go then try Spotify or Google All Access Music?
I think it depends on where you arrive in the cycle. If you're already used to other things, you may feel like, well, yeah, I see what they're trying to do, but Pandora is better. Or, oh, it's about time they got this because Android has had it forever. But I'm with you in that it's not really a bad thing that they've done this. I think that, yes, they did need to update the visual interface because it's been around for quite some time. And even though I don't care about it, other people do. So there's going to be that shiny new feeling whenever people look at this new interface because it's not the same as they've seen before. And as for the rest, there are things that, oh, we've had that in Android forever. Oh, you know, BlackBerry did that and so on. Well, great. Now iOS is doing those same things. And now that they have caught up and kind of narrowed the gap as far as what users have to say about, well, I don't like iOS because it doesn't do this and this other platform does. Now it seems like people are going to be on a relatively level playing field for at least a little bit in terms of feature set. So now Apple can say, all right, now that we've kept up with the Joneses, we can do something amazing next.
So I haven't gotten to use a rant tag on our show notes for a long time, but here's a perfect opportunity.
Oh, wow.
Tap and hold, Jamie. Tap and hold.
Do either one of you feel hurt, dismayed, or somehow betrayed that VoiceOver was not specifically mentioned in the presentation? Ricky.
No.
I don't get this. I really don't get this. I don't get it when it happens to Android either. They didn't mention TalkBack, and I don't get that. I don't know that we need to be represented. It's not like they're mentioning closed captioning. It's not like they're mentioning assistive touch. It's not like they're mentioning any other portions of the assistive technology that's built into either one of these operating systems.
And here's my feeling on this. They do mention VoiceOver improvements in release notes and that kind of thing. And I feel like I almost don't want them to mention accessibility specifically in their presentations because it feels a little bit like, look at us and all the wonderful things that we are doing for those special people. I would rather see more of what they did last year when they had a blind woman in the Apple ads and that kind of thing, where it's just slid into the media as not a big deal. And that's what I want us to work towards.
General use cases, or it's better than it's a bump on a slide like it was at Google I.O. where it was like, oh, yeah, we updated this stuff.
Yes.
It's like, hey, that's the stuff I use. Hold on a second.
Well, and like it or not, that is not visually cool. It is not sexy looking. And it's not going to keep the interest of the mass audience. So
for years, people at CSUN, people at convention, people who've tried to sell screen readers, for years it has been difficult to get sighted individuals to pay attention because there's nothing visually happening on screen. They can't necessarily follow along, or they've already read the whole paragraph before your screen reader. Well, I'm sorry, wait, those of you at 220 words per minute, but you've already read the whole paragraph before your screen reader reads it. So something like Zoom Text or Magic holds more interest to them because they can follow along with the highlighted word with a frame. It is. I agree with you, Jamie. I totally, totally agree with you. It is not necessarily visually appealing and, in fact, can be very confusing for sighted people. And the only way, you know, it's not like they're going to put screen curtain on and go, yeah, and this is what happens with voiceover.
I mean, like that demo that didn't quite work. That was a little confusing, too.
Yeah, that.
Oops.
Yeah. Well, what is it with having racing games all of a sudden in demos? And that happened at Google I.O., too. It was a long but well-paced WWDC. So if you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. It's available to download or go over to Twit and listen to the specials because Leo gets more downloads on his audio than video podcasts. And I was telling people on Twitter to definitely go listen to Leo's commentary on it because he was reading the slides and that's how I was able to follow along with some things was he described things that were going on visually and he described things that were flashed up on screen for his audio audience. So it just happened that we lucked out because he was doing all this DVS and all this extra description that normally wouldn't happen if you listen in on one of these things.
That's kind of neat. And one of the first things that they actually talked about during the keynote was a refresh for some hardware. Now, it's not a huge refresh or anything like that, but the MacBook Airs are refreshed a bit, and iFixit did their typical thing where they tore this thing apart and looked at the guts of it and said, all right, what do we have here? Looks like there is a bigger battery. There's a Haswell chip in there, which we expected, but not a whole lot of major changes. The outside looks just like you would expect, so they didn't really update that at all. What they did do, though, is they stopped using the SATA connection for the SSDs in there. So they went with PCI Express instead, which is a bit faster. So before you had the SSD, which is super fast, but there was kind of a bottleneck as far as how quickly SATA could handle this. So they've changed that, but not many major changes here. And no, it did not get a Retina display, but there's probably a reason for that.
Renee Ritchie says you can have thinness, battery life, or Retina. You can have two of the three, but not all three currently with the way technology works. And in some cases, you know, that's okay because as an app developer, you have to be able to make that work. So just having it Retina, then you have to go back and scale your app to make sure that it uses Retina correctly. And you'll hear stories about Finder looks great to a sighted person and Final Cut looks great to a sighted person, but then they go to use third-party app and it's like, it's ugly and all the pixels are because it wasn't scaled up for Retina. So where it really works is for something like video. If you're going to watch video, it looks really gorgeous. If you're going to use an Apple designed app, it's going to look really, really gorgeous. But the same thing is happening in Windows 8, by the way. Some of the new high-end laptops like the ones from Toshiba, app developers in Windows don't always use Windows in scaling. And so you can have something that looks really, really good, but have teeny tiny little buttons because the buttons didn't scale up on some of these higher resolution screens. And that's one of the things that's being talked about at Windows Build later this month is that Microsoft is really trying to entice people to start thinking of things in a 4K universe with all these amazing new monitor technologies coming out, which also new Macs will support, especially the new Mac Pro, will be these new higher-end monitors to be able to interact with some of these things and see them more clearly.
You know, one of the things that was very prominent at WWDC was the emergence of perhaps a new star in the Apple universe. And it wasn't Tim Cook, actually.
Nope.
Craig was awesome. Craig Federighi. Wait a minute. I'm misspeaking.
Federighi?
Yeah, I was looking
Federighi.
At that.
I'm trying to read this and speech is still in my head. I'm trying to remember the day of what they said. But Craig, sorry, Craig, about your last name, has been with Apple for a long time and has worked his way up and just really was good at passing along some of this information. He made jokes on stage. He made a joke about how we were saving the environment by not having it look like paper anymore. He made a joke about skeuomorphism and leather. He was just really, really funny. When things kind of sort of broke, he jumped right in there and sort of carried it. And I'm going to say this. He had more personality than Johnny Ive and Tim Cook combined. I mean, smart guys, don't get me wrong. Tim's a little bit more animated on this one. He's seeming to become more comfortable in the role of talking during these things. Johnny was Johnny. That was nothing new. But Craig just put a human face on it, and I felt really a whole lot better when he was on stage.
Yeah, I, again, missed most of the stream, but I caught portions of it and saw him, and I was thinking that he is a great addition to the, quote, new Apple. You know, before this, you had Steve Jobs, who was just this larger-than-life presence, and there was kind of a sense of people viewing Steve with awe, you know.
Now we have distortion field.
Yeah. And now we have Tim Cook, who is not viewed in the same way at all. Not that people hate Tim, but he doesn't have that sort of presence. Craig, though, really has a lot of personality and can carry this off, but it's in a much more laid back, sort of comfortable, realistic way that it's still fun to watch. And even though you don't have the reality distortion field, you get a kind of down to earth, oh, this is cool, this I understand, mm-hmm. and I like what this guy is saying, I feel comfortable about Apple kind of thing.
Apple works best when it's doing affirmational or aspirational. You know, it's the beautiful, magical, you know, you feel good about yourself for buying these devices, and you will feel even better when you buy it in 2 years when we tell you that that thing you bought just now is a brick in 2 years. It seemed more natural coming out of Craig. Tim still couldn't, to me, and this is my personal opinion, Tim couldn't go the same route and take some of those jobisms and make them stick in the same way. In fact, it feels very glued on. And he's had media training, but when he goes to emphasize some things, it just felt weird. It didn't have the right beat. Craig did it very naturally. And it is rare to find a showman that can do what you do to make that work. And Steve was crazy about that. If you read the Steve Jobs book, you know, he would do those presentations 3 times in a row to the point of, that pedestal is coming up too fast, or it needs to turn the phone a little slower, or, you know, but you can tell that Scott Forstall is out. You can tell that these guys feel more comfortable to do the Apple that they want to do, whether you agree with it or not, whether you like where they're going or not. You can start to see that it's not any more of the what would Steve do anymore kind of era.
Well, continuing the kind of the fighting back theme, it looks to me like the ad campaign is going to change. I know one of the things, Joe, you've talked about is that young people are so prominently featured in Google ads, and that Google has done a pretty good job of trying to pin Apple into a corner of, hey, if you're old, you use an iPhone. If you're young and hip, you're going to use an Android. And it looks to me like Apple's coming out swinging on that with some of their new ad campaigns that they're about to release.
Well, they're a lot better than the ad campaigns I complained about last year, the genius on the plane ads. God, those were terrible. You do have to kind of sort of go after guys in your own wheelhouse occasionally. Samsung demonstrated that last year with the whole standing in line with the parents kind of thing. And with a new operating system, this allows Apple to kind of sort of say, no, we heard what you were saying, and here's what we're doing. So they're trying some new ads that kind of play into Google's feeling, because remember last month, Google brought Larry Page out, and you know, it's not just about products, it's about the human experience. Apple kind of went down that road too, and they kind of reminded you that we've been about the human experience for a while too. That's really our bag, and they reassert that in these new ads, which I guess are okay, but at the same time, I'm in this all day long, so for me, it's literally like being a food critic where you sit there and go, this is the greatest pizza ever, but it could use just a little bit more salt or have a little bit more crunch. And so when I watch these ads, I do it from the point of, as a marketer, as well as someone who follows this for a living. What did you guys think? I mean, did these ads affect you either way?
They're very visual, which they're going to be.
Well, we're back to what I said earlier, you know?
So it's going to be a little tougher for us in the blind community, I think. There's a story that we cover on the next Triple Click Home, which Triple Click 19, Joshua Loya joins us, and we take a little deeper dive into the nuts and bolts of kind of what is being released. We're not doing that so much on this week's podcast. This is more of an overview and commentary approach to WWDC. But they actually, there's an article about a new, well, several new characters that Apple is developing based on actual employees, but yet these characters are fictitious and they have their own email accounts and places they're going and things they're doing. It's weird. It's almost like an alternate reality.
How strange.
It is very strange. Miko Hare, I think, is the female character's name that I saw. Yeah. It is odd, actually.
Well, it's brand involvement. In a way, it's not enough that you're clicking on something anymore or liking something. It's, are you responding to it? Are you in a dialogue with me? And that's what advertisers want to see. Downloads can, numbers can be faked. Likes can be faked. Twitter followers can be faked. But, you know, non-bots talking about your brand or interacting with your brand and showing up in a knowledge graph, that's a little better in that. If you mention, let's say, the new Apple iPad mini, how many people talked about the Apple iPad mini, but furthermore, how many people then went on to say, you should go get it, or you should buy it, or I just got my iPad mini, this is what I'm doing for my iPad mini. It's a little bit more engagement that's being marketed to now, and it's affecting how internet advertising is working in general. It's also why Facebook has decided to kind of sort of abandon some of their sponsored ads, because those weren't necessarily generating into brand involvement. You weren't necessarily interacting with the brands if they were up there. Oh, to be fair, also, Apple has done the non-text-driven ads before. Remember I talked about at Christmas, the heart and soul, where if you didn't...
Yeah, this is not new.
Yeah, this is Apple. They go through a phase every, I'd say, 9 to 16 months where they do nothing but musical ads. The first iPod ads... There wasn't a word one in there. It was just a famous song and people dancing. The U2 one I can think of where it was the U2 branded iPod, where it was the band members in silhouette wearing iPods around their neck. So this is kind of normal, and I don't want to necessarily give the impression that Apple has just abandoned the ability to know that this is an Apple ad. This has happened before.
So do you think that Google's just going to throw up its hands and give up, or do you think they might do some?
Yep, sure, you bet.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought too. They're just done.
No,
yeah.
No, they're done. They're done. That's
retired.
Why they spent $1.3 billion on Waze.
Yes,
the money continues, Ricky. $1 billion, $1 billion one. Now $1 billion three. Yeah. Huh.
I wonder who's going to buy what for $1.5 billion or four. You know, I think it's just going to jump right to five.
More money.
I don't know if there are any other mapping companies to buy, though, because I mean, Waze is pretty much it.
No, Waze was kind of the one that everybody was kind of circling around. Supposedly, Apple offered $500,000 and Facebook offered $1 million and Yahoo offered something. Because, you know, they're just dumb and silly and full of money.
Well, that was just going to be like an impulse buy for Yahoo.
Yeah. Just like walking a stick by. Of gum. I'll take these Tic Tacs and give me a pack of Winston's and Waze over there for $1 billion, please. Mayor, that's just crazy. There are three things you do. Microsoft did Skype to keep people off of Yammer and other things that were coming into their way, right? So Microsoft bought Skype because A, they could control the messaging space. B, they could tie it into Facebook. C, they could have it on every platform imaginable, because now you can say that Microsoft has Linux-based products and other things because Skype has that. Google buying Waze is one of those, like Facebook last year buying Instagram. It's taking a chess piece off the table so no one else could come in, buy it, and challenge them. And they've done it in such a way that wouldn't necessarily get them nailed by antitrust, or at least antitrust in America. Who knows? EU could still come after them for any number of reasons. But with that said, there's a theory going on that something happened to Google Maps and the algorithm, or that there was some key technology that changed, because Google Maps was giving you some odd directions. And now it's felt like Waze will help with that. But even more so, Waze is socially based. So if you're coming up on some construction, you can actually use the Waze app to make a quick note in Waze to say, anybody also coming up I-45, be careful, there's construction on exit 32. So with this social component, you can actually get more real-time information it's more than just points of interest. You get information that's helping you while you're riding or driving. And that's kind of helpful. But of course, everything Google's been doing lately kind of also ties into Google Plus. So some people have speculated that Waze being bought in also kind of has a Google Plus element to it as well, because you could then say, snap a picture of said accident and tie it to your Google Plus account. And so that way it could show up visually on the device saying, yeah, coming up is some road construction and an accident, and here's what it looks like. So that way you know you need to get over to the left lane rather than the right.
We mentioned earlier the idea of responding to criticism, and it would appear that even members of our own community and the blindness community have, in fact, done the same thing related to the new announcements from Apple. Ricky, what has AppleViz done this week?
Well, they have reiterated something that they've spoken about in the past. There was a beta at one point, and there was an accessibility problem in that beta, and the AppleViz team released information about that accessibility problem. This did two things. One, it caused the community to start writing to Apple Accessibility and making sure that they were aware of that. But the other thing that it did was really cause some controversy as to how much should be talked about if you have become a developer, if you're a part of the Apple Developer Program and you've signed your NDA. AppleViz finalized on a policy stating that we aren't going to talk about anything that isn't yet in the public domain, and we ask the people that are posting on our site to adhere to that as well. So they've recently reposted this just as a reminder to people. And I feel two ways about this, because I don't think that the blind community has any more right than anyone else to talk out of turn if they're using a beta and they have signed an NDA as a developer saying, I won't talk about this. With that said, I sort of wonder how it is that between now and the final release of iOS 7 and Mavericks, we're going to see a number of mainstream articles from respected journalists who talk about what they find in these betas. And it's always been this way. And I suppose my question is, how do they get away with doing this? And Apple never seems to crack down on anyone for it, even very visible people who have signed their byline saying, here I am talking about the beta.
Microsoft
Why
does.
Is this? Yeah.
If you listen to Windows Weekly, you'll find out that Barry, Joe, and Paul were locked out of some things for 8.1 for good or bad. Leo, you know, famously got knocked out of WWDC for holding up his MacBook Air and streaming the conference that one time.
Yes.
Be that was extremely blatant, and Leo is a very visible person.
Yeah.
I think what's important here is for some people, this is very new to them to have the access to these betas, to have the opportunity to play with these things, to be involved. And that's okay, because everybody's learning. I feel like iOS is like Windows 95. Everybody has an opportunity to be involved. We're all teaching each other. It's something that's bringing the community together. And we haven't had that really a communal experience since the beginning of Windows 95 when we left DOS and we all went to GUI and went, where is everything? How do I get to it? But at the same time, and as a developer, we recognize this, there is going to be changes in a beta, and there's going to be features that will appear and disappear. There's going to be ways that things work that are going to change. And some people are thinking that this is it, you know, that beta is really just a sneak preview of a finished product, and it's not. And a lot of misinformation can come out of that, and a lot of hurt feelings can come out of that. And really, unless you're filing bug reports, honestly, you really shouldn't play with these things. You're going to do some damage to your hardware, possibly. You could brick your phone. You could brick your iPad. You could brick things. Same thing goes with Nexus. If you're going to go get a beta, there is no guarantees here. So it's very important that you be careful when doing this, but also when you're passing along that information. It sounds really cool and really neat, but it is possible that that won't be there at the point of Gold Master or final release.
Something good or something bad, for that matter. Something could really...
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you've made a good point about sending bug reports. If you choose to be a part of this beta program and you are passionate about making things better for yourself and other people, file bug reports. Don't just use this as an opportunity to, ooh, I get to play with the new shiny thing before anybody else. Make that useful.
There are companies who will kick you out of the next beta if you have not filed a bug report, if you've not been an active participant in the beta. I'm not saying that's what Apple's going to do, or Google, or Microsoft, or anybody like that. Although Microsoft is pretty cool in that if you file stuff, they usually give you stuff. So we saw that you filed a bug that really helped us. We wanted you to have, you know, hypothetically, an Xbox, which they've given stuff away before. Having a dialogue with the developer to help them make something better, that's the point of all of this. It's not, again, like Ricky just said, ooh, look at this, it's so cool. Dude, it seems neat. But it really is about making the community better for not just voiceover users, but all users. And moreover, remember, we're coming up on a brand new version of iOS. It's going to be kind of confusing for a lot of people who are on older hardware to know what's going on. So if you don't tag your stuff iOS 7, or if you don't tag it in a certain way, people who are coming new to this who don't have the ability to stay up on it like we do, you know, we'll get confused about, well, can I run this? Can I do this? Can I do that? Or does it run on my device and all that? It gets super confusing. So it's usually better to take those and put them in a special list or section it off. So only that's kind of there. And the other side of it is, as a community, AppleVis has to moderate. And that's the other part of it, is it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to go in and start striking those conversations from your site or from what's going on to enforce your half of it as well.
And of course, we haven't even talked about OS 10.9 Mavericks. And will iWork for iCloud actually support tables, because it's a browser-based application, and all kinds of questions that we in the blind community...
For Office 365
and
for iPhone.
Yeah.
But why couldn't they have named it Sea Lion?
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, that was cute. They were running out of cat names. I just have to say... internally, I've called it here on the team OS Top Gun, because I couldn't leave the EOL possibilities out of it at all. I wanted to boot up to Danger Zone when you launch your Mavericks.
And will the new voices only be for Siri, or will they be for voiceover on iOS and the Mac as well?
Will they have like a California attitude, know, steak and you beat it up, you know, and you get some tasty waves and...
So, like, what can I help you with today?
Yeah. OS 10 Valley Girl. Nice. Would that be a new voice for voiceover?
Who knows?
That'd be, like, totally cool.
Maybe.
That would be, like, awesome. But, like, they have to have, like, every time there is, like, a space.
Yes.
Like, they have to put in
Alex
the
breathes,
thing, yeah. Right? So, you, like...
Do that instead, you know?
Yes.
And on the backs of every sentence, it would just turn up into a question.
Yeah. That would make that easy. Don't have to worry about punctuation.
That OS 10 Kardashian.
Yeah, you didn't have to worry about punctuation at all.
And I don't know. Now I'm scaring myself. Wait a minute. Maybe this is not a good idea.
No.
Now I'm thinking of what the voiceover names would be.
Oh,
and
man.
And Ariana.
Yeah, exactly.
this is not a good idea. But that both OS 10 Mavericks as well as iOS 7, possibly the new iPhone, possibly a new iPad, and more hardware, all coming out later this year, along with the new Mac Pros, those big, honking, round-looking, awesome pieces of hardware that are probably going to be about $4,000 to $5,000, because that was cruel. It was like, hey, we're going to update the MacBook Pro line. We're going to make it here in America. It's going to be really, really neat. Here's what it looks like, and you can't buy it.
That's right. It's not ready yet. And we're not going to tell you how much it costs.
Let me tell you, the store is closed, and now the store is back open, and whip out your credit cards, and not so much this time. But they do look super cool, and they're going to support 4K displays. In fact, that's what I was really depressed about was, hey, we're coming out with some new stuff. You're going to have to rebuy all your Apple accessories again. AirPort Extreme. Hey, new AirPort Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
got it. Throw that other one in the trash. Get your credit card out.
Yep.
Here comes another Airport Extreme. Your monitor cinema display. You like your 30-inch cinema display? Toss that out because we're going to support 4K. Just wanted to cry. I just wanted to cry. It's like lightning connectors, but more expensive.
Well, coming up after the break, why I might buy a new pair of shades, Ricky's going to promise to stop texting while she drives, and Joe is going to ride a bike right here on the Serotalk podcast.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Walk to work, walk the dog, have the dog walk you, take a hike, take a bike, skate, dance, hop, jump, do the Humpty Hump, skip seconds, skip dessert, skip, skip, skip to my loo, don't skip breakfast, drink H2O, lower your sodium, raise the roof, shake your booty, stock up on vegetables, and don't forget to eat them. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 159 right here, and it is time to rip open the mailbag. Ricky, just dig your hand down in there and pull up something, would you?
Oh, I haven't seen this in a while.
Oh, is that a sharp object?
No.
Everything's
fine. You're reminding me of TSA. Stop. Can I stick my hand in your bag?
I'm going to have to x-ray these eye reports and make sure you're not smuggling contraband in this here audio file.
Yeah, come here, Jamie. Let me see your midriff.
Okay. Yep, there it is.
Yeah, all right. Oh, you've been eating barbecue, I can tell. Yeah.
First up, we've got an eye report that has been scanned and determined as clean. This comes from Bruce.
Yes, this is Bruce in Little Rock. I would like to see some inclusion of updated information regarding the autonomous cars, Google and whatever. I keep seeing newscasts on ABC regarding car pilots because of snow and fog and how horrendous those accidents are. And I actually wrote an email to abcnews.com regarding the autonomous car, so it will be interesting to see what response I get, if any. And the pizza idea sounds like a great idea, the drones, simply because I have a daughter who was robbed at gunpoint with Pizza Hut as a Pizza Hut driver. And number two, where I happen to be living in this part of the city, we have no food delivery services because they say it's too unsafe. So it's an interesting idea. Great podcast. I'm going to be interested to see when this 8.1 coming out. Good information about that. So anyway, thanks a lot. Have a great day.
You know, I would like to provide more information about the autonomous vehicles, but it seems like what happens is there will be a lot of information about them for a couple of weeks. For example, in Nevada, the car is being licensed to be on the road and things like that. And then things go silent for a while. And then there's another huge news story or two about how these things are progressing. And as far as the pizza issue, I don't know why, but I hadn't even considered the fact that it's going to be much safer for drivers, especially in bad neighborhoods, because you can't really mug the drone, I guess. It drops off what it needs to, and yeah.
Well, Google's going to be at a convention in Orlando for National Federation of the Blind Convention. So there's a possibility, you know, because there was the self-driving blind driver challenge last year. So we could have an update probably around convention coverage. So that's entirely possible. And there are other people getting involved in this. Volvo is doing something. BMW is looking at some other things. So I'm standing by. We are not going to see like those cars available to us for quite some time, because remember, there's some social contract issues that have to be worked out, which is it's okay for the sighted person to text, eat pizza, shave, and yell at the kids in the back seat totally all at the same time, but put a blind person behind that wheel, whoa, no.
That's right.
Sighted people will feel more comfortable with people who use sip and puff and have no use of arm and leg before they let us behind the wheel. Plus, there's going to be an issue with insurance. I don't know how that works out, what the first insurances are like, and how expensive it's going to be. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen socially. It's not technology that's really the barrier now. It's really about people accepting things. And if you need any more proof of that, how people freaked out from going from me holding a cell phone up and taking your picture and running a video to, oh my God, it's on your face, Google Glass, let's ban it.
It's about right. Nope. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some things we're going to have to get rid of as a collective society before we can really take advantage of this technology. And I don't mean to be a downer, but that's some of the things I've been thinking about lately on this particular subject.
Up next, we've got an email from Mike Arrigo talking about things that he wants to see in iOS 7 now that we've got a beta out there and some things have been talked about as far as new features. And one of the things that he wants to see, and I do too, frankly, is file management on the device itself and actually treating it as a mass storage device where you could kind of take iTunes out of the picture. We would so love that. I know. We can dream. If we're going to dream, dream big. We both want that.
Yeah. iRadio is a separate app. No, wait, it's in iTunes. Yeah, no, go ahead. It's totally fine.
Yeah, that's about right.
And we just thought iTunes was dying, right?
They are getting better at multi-platform because at least with iCloud for doing documents and stuff, you could actually do it on Windows. So that shocked me, actually, when they were saying that you could actually, you know, work on the same dock in Safari that you could then turn around and work in Windows. There was some third-party API movement. There was some multi-platform mentions. So I guess I'm making fun of it in a way, but Apple did lighten up a little bit. I don't think they'll open up all the way. They won't go the Windows or Android route.
Right.
But Mike, there's still hope out there, buddy.
Yeah. And I mean, some of the other things that he wants are things that I don't see Apple doing, like giving you the ability to change default apps for things and change default keyboards. Of course, there was an interesting mainstream article where someone was speculating about, oh, Flexi is going to be in iOS 7. And that got retweeted all over the place. And Flexi came out and said, no, we have no such announcement to make. I don't know what you're talking about, but, you know, we do have an SDK. And so Flexi may be coming to various apps and stuff, but no confirmable, is that a word?
That we know of today at this time until iOS 7 becomes gold master.
Yes. Also, and this is one that makes sense to me, it doesn't look like you're going to be able to manage voices easily. And I'm not just talking about switching a Siri voice or a voiceover voice from one engine to another, but with all these in-app purchases, let's say you've got VoiceDream and you purchased Acapella Heather for that one, and then you've got a GPS app like GPS Drive and you purchased Heather for that. Well, now she's taking up space twice, and so there's not a way to manage those engines for in-app purchases that you've made. You have to download it as many times as you purchase it.
Unless you're running Android, which you can then replace the system TTS all the way across and use that TTS across all your various apps. I think was interesting, we didn't even touch on the Siri using Bing thing. I actually kind of teased that earlier in the program. What people would have thought of was unthinkable, that Microsoft and Apple would be working together and that you would use Bing search instead of, you know, Google search, forgetting that Microsoft and Apple have been working together quite well since the 80s, actually. There's a long history of that. But you never say never. I mean, here you've got Google, who paid Apple $3 billion to retain search, but they got a certain type of search in Safari versus now Siri going Bing, which kind of fragments the experience. I think that's kind of weird, but I also understand the need to start training people. So when you flip the switch and do move them over to, let's say, hypothetically, Bing all the way across, it doesn't come as a jarring shock of, oh, what happened to my search results? Anything's possible. I think Apple demonstrated this week that it's not who you thought they were. The same way that I don't think you can categorize Google anymore, what we talked about last month. What is Google? Is it the autonomous cars? Is it the, you know, gigantic satellites watching you from space? Is it Google Now? We don't know. Apple is going in the same direction that I don't think you can really say that they have a definable thing, because they held WWDC on the same day as E3, and now there's talk about game controller support for things like Apple TV, and that Apple TV could become a video game console. Apple is really good at saying, look, we're building this. It won't show up in iPhone 5. It won't show up in iOS 7, but we're trying it out because when the next iPhone comes out and when iOS 8 comes out, we know it works. We've tested it. We've put $1 billion of R&D into this. And that's one of the beauties of Apple is it just works. That's that phrase.
We've got one last email from Pam Francis and a total subject change here, but it's one that I find very interesting. And Pam writes in to thank us for a very informative podcast. And she poses a question. How does modern technology affect the literacy of this generation? And essentially, she's talking about if you are a mainstreamed student and you are forced or you make the choice to exclusively use speech synthesis, how do you learn basic things like the proper spelling and usage of the word? So this email came about because we were talking about spelling. And how do you learn the structure of sentences and where punctuation belongs and things like that? So I would be curious, because I'm not going to make a blanket statement and saying everyone who can't read Braille is doomed and unable to read or write coherently or anything like that. I think that Braille does play a huge part in that.
Agreed.
But if you're someone who uses speech synthesis exclusively and you feel confident about your spelling and writing skills, let us know. resources@saratalk.com. Reach out to us on iBlink Radio through your Android or iOS device, or leave a blog comment on sarotalk.com, properly spelled, of course, in order to prove your point, but let us know how you feel,
cat with the
how
cane.
You managed to be so confident about this without ever seeing the printed or the brailled word.
It's time now for Roundabout. Wow, this first article intrigues me. A pair of glasses that have bone conduction technology built into them so that you will get speech feedback for things around you.
Not Google Glass?
Not Google Glass.
No.
Really?
I would think that that would definitely be doable as well, maybe at some point. But I think the thing that's cool to me is the idea. It's a company that is a startup company. If I remember, is this actually out, Ricky? I can't tell.
They have a price for it, but I don't know if it's actually available.
Okay, right. But the idea of bone conduction, that way your ears are free. So you're doing what you need to do. We've talked about this a gazillion times with the Aftershocks products. But to see the bone conduction technology implemented in this way is pretty
interesting. To get feedback, too, from people who've played with it and then have various viewpoints of whether they like it or don't like it, or everybody has their own flavor of ice cream. So some people really like it, or some people find it kind of disconcerting because they're used to wearing headphones or earbuds or what have you.
Right.
But it's neat that there are alternatives, because I don't know about you guys, but I've sat through enough presentations of this is the sonar cane and it will beep and make noises when you're walking down the street with it. You know, all these alternatives to mobility.
Yeah.
And it's neat to see the innovation, because sometimes that works. But I don't know. Again, each person has their own likes and dislikes. And what you were saying earlier, Ricky, about how you've come into it, where is your starting point? You know, there are people now coming into touchscreens and growing up with touchscreens. You know, we as older blind Americans, it's hard for us to put ourselves in the millennials' pocket and say, wow, would I really be using this device or feel very strongly about interacting with this device if I just grew up using nothing but a touchscreen? And I mean, that's what happens with, we've talked about on this program, kids growing up with iPads and just going up and then trying to interact with the television thinking that it was touch-enabled because it's a great big screen.
Yeah. So the OrCam, which is what this thing is called, $2,500 right now.
Yeah.
I hope this will come down a little bit. Yeah. And apparently you cannot use insurance or anything like that to cover this. They say that they're working on that. But no, you got to pay out of your own pocket or find a lovely little benefactor if you want to check this out.
Well, I mean, it's a little more than $1,500 for Google Glass Explorer Edition. That's interesting. You won't necessarily have Google services connected. That's kind of the benefit of why I like Google Glass. You know, not having played with it, not having seen it, maybe it'll be at convention or maybe it'll be something that'll be at an event near you so you can play with it. But it's competition, and that's good because we don't want just nothing but Google Glass. You know, we want other people to develop things. And then that's how we get innovation. We just talked about how iOS borrowed from other people to make a better operating system. So we want competition. We want more people out there making these things.
You know, we have lots of discussions on this podcast, and we talk about lots of different stories, sometimes directly, and then sometimes topics will lead into something else. And I recall us having a discussion about texting hands-free a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
And Ricky, you said, now, why would that be a big deal? Because we know that there have been a couple studies that say it's as dangerous as, well, texting the regular way. This article explains why.
Yeah, and it was in a way that I didn't expect. I don't know if this also applies to talking on the phone while driving as opposed to talking to a passenger, but maybe in a way it sort of does. What they talk about is that hands-free texting can be more dangerous than just like, actually
like
texting at a stoplight or something.
If you were drinking, it was the equivalent of 0.8 blood alcohol.
Yeah, which is a trip. And the reason behind this, apparently, is that it takes a little more concentration, or you're using a different part of your brain to speak to a computer. You have to phrase what you want to say and then make it come out of your mouth coherently. So whether you're telling Siri to look up something or you are trying to dictate a text, you're thinking and you're actually speaking in a different way than you would be if you were just saying the same thing to the person next to you. So there were studies where the people were, they were looking ahead or they were, you know, glancing out of the corner of their eyes, but they were, quote, looking but not seeing. So it was kind of like the equivalent of in one ear and out the other. And that's what they felt about the cars that were going by. Oh, yeah, car. Yep. I'm continuing with my text now. So.
And not only texting, but things like adjust the brightness on my screen and play my ELO playlist. When you
right.
were actually giving, which is more and more being seen in vehicles, when you're giving other instructions besides a text message, that also created this problem, apparently.
And of course, the car manufacturers don't want these studies to get out much
no.
because they're like, oh, no, we made it. We spent all this research and money and stuff building this capability into our automobiles. Please don't say it's not safe.
You'd have thunk that maybe someone would have checked that out as they were doing the research, but oh, maybe they did. Who knows?
And maybe they just decided, nah, we probably did it wrong.
I
guess it's our equivalent of trying to hear something with speech synthesis in a crowded restaurant with 80s music going on in the background. You know, it's visual stimuli going on for drivers. It scares the living daylights out of me. You know, the said that Google Glass isn't supposed to work while driving. You know, heads-up displays in certain ways. They've tried, you know, flashing those things up on the windshield because the idea was that you didn't have to move your eyes too much. You could see the road and still see how fast you were traveling or map off to the corner. The more these things become complex and have more features to them, then it does take a little bit more, especially if you're not familiar with them. If you're not a good technology user to begin with, well, then you're struggling with the technology and driving a 4,000-pound weapon. So,
yikes. Yeah,
you know,
and maybe our brains just aren't meant to work this way, because you've heard the old comedy routine about why do people turn down the radio when they're looking for an address? But people do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself doing something similar where I was, I was smelling something strange coming in through my window. And I guess it was the neighbors cooking something, but I was trying to determine if, you know, did somebody catch something on fire or are they barbecuing or what? And I was reading a book and I paused the book in order to be able to smell better.
Go through the mental library of smell of vision for Ricky.
Yeah.
Okay. Somehow those two go together. Well, you know, have you ever smelled something that you've tasted or tasted something that you've smelled, like you taste something and it brings back a smell kind of thing? I've had lots of eye surgeries. So back in the days when they gave you kind of the ether, I would walk through and smell cleaning products and fly right back to that. But there was also sometimes when I would Listerine or something like that, I would taste that and immediately think of being on the operating table with that stupid ether cup coming at me.
Yikes.
Yeah, so you have those kind of transmeta moments where you come across something and you immediately transport yourself back to,
Yeah. Well, so maybe rather than driving a car, Joe, you could just get on a bike with vibrating handlebars and just cruise around the track. What do you think of that idea?
I think this sounds as distracting as having the things in front of you. with things like heads-up displays and stuff. I think this is neat. I think that years of using a straight cane might actually have nailed me from using – or the Opticon might have nailed me from being able to use this effectively. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you would have these receptors on the bike that would be able to translate – things and upcoming objects through the handlebars through vibration and subtle or more violent vibrating to let you know when you're coming closer or when you're getting away from an object that you're actually going around. I guess, I mean, not having used this, and it would be interesting to know, does it come across, if it's a long handlebar, does it go across your hand vertically like there's an individual sensor? So if somebody is kind of in your path, but then you're coming up on a tree on your left, does it vibrate on your far left and sort of on your knuckle towards your thumb that someone's directly in front of you? I mean, there's a lot of information that could be transported here, but, you know, the article here mentions about how people were using this successfully, so I could be just out of touch.
And apparently this was like for just one event, so this is not going to be commercially available, if I understand the article correctly.
Right. Not yet, anyway,
right.
But they're doing this in Bristol,
yes.
And sounds like an interesting time.
Does, actually.
Oh, no. After, if you did this and it was a prolonged period, is it like neuropathy where you then go to use your cane or go to use your service animal and you feel, because it's not
vibrating. It feels weird because it's not vibrating.
Yeah. Or if you go to enough rock concerts, the right ear doesn't sound as good as it used to. So now it affects your mobility. Oh, wait, that's me.
Probably not so much you, Joe, but I'm curious, Ricky, have you used eSpeak for a long time and then gone back to Eloquence?
I haven't done that with eSpeak and Eloquence, but I have done that with DeckTalk and Eloquence. And it was interesting because if I was switching from one synth to another for the first couple of days, I literally had a headache and felt like there were needles piercing my eardrums because there was some different frequency or some change that just my brain did not like.
I know. Whenever I go from eSpeak with NVDA, although, you know, obviously there's other things you can use with NVDA, but man, eSpeak is so responsive, it's kind of hard to ignore. But when you go from that back to Eloquence, there's these frequency differences. And for a little while, Eloquence sounds horrible. It just sounds horrifically bad.
Yeah.
And then after a little while, it's like, okay, this is normal again. So strange, weird, kind of like drinking Pepsi and chocolate milk or something. I don't know.
Cherry Pepsi. Where did that come from last week? Cherry Pepsi? I want to stop here for pulling this podcast over. That's sweet on sweet. Oh, really?
No, it's super awesome. It's the loveliness of Pepsi with a nice fruity overtone.
And you didn't mention Maximum Overdrive and all those conversations you had about soda machines last week. That's like the very opening of Maximum Overdrive, is a machine shooting Cokes out at people. When Lisa said that, I was like, oh, dude, Maximum Overdrive, and Rockstar didn't pick up on it. Shame on her.
See, you weren't here to have my head in EOL space. So,
makes perfect sense.
Yes, and Lisa and I didn't really know how to cue that and make it go. And
Right.
Listeners, I'm actually changing the conversation because on staff I use Julie and I get picked on all the time. So I use NeoSpeech Julie, and so I wasn't going to participate there. When Jamie said, not so much you, Joe, because he's making a joke that I use Julie.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, I like Julie because she's very happy and she says terrible things in such an upbeat, you know, she can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye, dirty laundry.
Yeah.
There is a hole in your roof.
Yeah,
the sun is no longer shining. The world is ending today.
Yep. Yeah, that's Julie. She's my happy little speech synthesis cheerleader.
Indeed, she is. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up 159. And I don't know what we're going to do for 160. It just seems like we got to do something for 160, but we probably won't. So we'll just do the same old normal podcast and try to do some really cool stories and just try to get some good
stuff. We'll be here for 160. That's our contribution.
That's it. That's our commitment. That's our contract.
We'll keep delaying this off. We'll think about 175. Yeah. We'll think about 200. Yeah. We'll think about
That's right.
Not that we're going to do it.
Not 500. We got to do something. When we hit 500, we got to make a big deal about that.
Yes, we will. on SPN Radio, we will play episodes 1 through 500.
Sweet, a marathon of wow! You got my brain going now. Thanks.
Oh no! I'll be even more cruel. We'll give away something randomly during the 500 episodes.
You have to listen to them all.
That is. Yeah.
We
funny.
Won't do that, yeah. but you will have.
No,
to.
We will.
A MacBook
we
Pro.
We live those podcasts, so no.
Yeah.
Newsflash, folks. We barely remember what we did just 5 episodes ago. Sometimes.
You can do like 3 prizes, like a MacBook and an iPad and a Nexus or something.
I carry Pepsi.
And that.
Yeah, oh, that, there you that go. Too. If you have other crazy ideas and promotions, or if you have, better yet, ideas we shouldn't do, that's probably way more productive to tell us don't do that. Send it in, and how can they reach us? They can reach us by all the ways that Patrick will mention at the end of this particular podcast.
Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.